Blog Talk Radio.
Delving past the headlines, sorting through the media bias, exposing the propaganda, and challenging you to use your brain. It's time to tap into the truth.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed time to tap into the truth. Welcome to today's broadcast. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing. Joining us today is Mr. Michael Conley. He is the current executive director of the United States Justice Foundation, and please help me in welcoming him to the show. Thanks for spending part of your day with us today, sir.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right. The listeners out there who may not be familiar with you and your organization, if you don't mind giving us a little bit of background on yourself and then about the United States Justice Foundation.
Well, I've been involved in practicing law off and on. I semi-retired at one point for about 35 years at this point, and my specialty was always constitutional law. And I helped found the U.S. Justice Foundation back in about 36 years ago with Gary Creep. And Gary was executive director, and I served as consultant and did some constitutional work for him. And Gary was recently elected judge out in San Diego County. So they asked me if I would become the executive director, and I said as long as I don't have to move to the People's Republic of California, that would be fine. So I operate actually out of the Dallas area, and I'm a U.S. Army veteran. I've written 4 books. I had a booklet on the Constitution. One of my books on my father's unit in World War II called The Mortarman has become a bestseller on Amazon and in other locations. And I've got a novel out there called Amayeli, A Story of America. And then I've got several other books of ghost stories that I've collected over the years as a Boy Scout leader and this sort of thing. And the book on the Constitution is something that we're in the third printing of now. Basically, I take the entire Constitution, all the amendments, all the sections, the way they were originally written, put them into this booklet, and then put my comments about each section and each amendment and about what they really mean. And a lot of people are buying them to hand out in schools because our kids aren't learning about the Constitution. And that brings us to the founding principles of the United States Justice Foundation. There were twofold things that we wanted to do. Number one, we wanted to educate the public about the Constitution and about the dangers facing the Constitution, because we saw those many, many years ago, what was coming and what was happening to our Constitution and how it was being eroded. So I do a lot of writing. I have my own blog and my own talk radio show on the Constitution, and I write about the things that are happening in this country and post them on my blog, and we're putting them on the website for USJF, which is usjf.net. For anybody that wants to go there, we're soon going to have a new website with a lot more information on it. But the second thing that the U.S. Justice Foundation was designed to do was to represent individuals who were having their constitutional rights taken away by the federal government, the local government, the state government. It doesn't matter. If their constitutional rights are being attacked, then we go in and we defend them. And we do this at no charge. We raise the money independently, through fundraisers that we send out, through people that just listen to me on the radio and go to our website and want to donate to us to help us do this. We also get involved in issues involving the entire country, things like balance of powers. Right now we are involved in 4 lawsuits against Obamacare, 2 of which are now in front of the Supreme Court. And we're going to be filing briefs in the Supreme Court in those 2 lawsuits. And we filed a number of briefs around the country in courts of appeals in the Supreme Court. We were involved in the Defense of Marriage Act case, defending it, and we have been involved in a number of the Second Amendment cases. And so we have, you know, a lot of things we do and a lot of projects we're engaged in, and there are many more out there. People are coming to us all the time wanting to know if we're going to be able to do something about Obama's executive orders and we are very, very much looking into that. I have, in fact, drawn up formal articles of impeachment of Obama because of his violation of his oath of office. And it's the same oath that I took as a member of the military to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And most people do not realize that there are criminal penalties in a federal statute for violation of that oath. So if you do something to denigrate the Constitution or you do something to try to destroy our constitutional form of government, you can be put in jail for up to a year and fined up to $10,000. So as I said, the Justice Foundation is we've been very successful throughout the years, and we are involved in a number of different areas, and we're trying to do more. And we're trying to get more funding so that we can get involved in a number of other issues out there that are really concerning us at this point.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me like you definitely have a full plate, especially given where our federal government's gone. Currently, both the legislative branch and the executive branch is doing very little in terms of honoring their oath to protect the Constitution. You said you've been very successful over the years. For the folks that aren't familiar with you, would you mind telling us about one or two of those better-known cases?
Well, there was a case that I filed a brief in for the Justice Foundation a number of years ago in the United States Supreme Court. It involved the United States Steel Company down in Louisiana, where they were engaging in affirmative action to the point where it was reverse discrimination against individuals down there who were Caucasians. And we filed a brief in that, and the Supreme Court, in fact, cited my brief in ruling that the reverse discrimination was not acceptable in the workplace. And even if, you know, the unions approved of it, which they did, it still was not acceptable in the workplace. And then there was a case involving the Casey versus Planned Parenthood, or I should say Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was in the in Pennsylvania, that involved a statute that basically tried to regulate abortion clinics, and because they were totally unregulated. And I had helped draw up a law in Louisiana that had passed the Louisiana legislature, and I defended it in court, and we won on some points, we lost on some. This was the first case that actually went to the Supreme Court, and I filed a brief in there for the U.S. Justice Foundation, and we were successful in getting some of the protections put in, because up to that point, women were going to abortion clinics where the abortions didn't even have to be performed by a doctor. That's how unregulated they were. And most of these clinics were Planned Parenthood operations, and the legislature in Pennsylvania passed this law, and we helped defend it. And we were successful there to a certain extent. One of our latest successes is we are involved in a lawsuit against the National Defense Authorization Act to declare parts of it that had been put in by the Congress illegally, which authorized the president to basically suspend the constitutional rights of Americans and use the U.S. military, which is in violation of both the Constitution and federal statutes, to use the U.S. military to arrest and detain Americans on suspicion of being involved in terrorism, just suspicion, and arrest them, basically hold them indefinitely without even filing charges against them. And we have been successful in getting a lower court to declare that unconstitutional. And so we're hoping that will hold. We intend to follow that case all the way to the Supreme Court also.
That's definitely something that is more than worthwhile. I don't think a lot of lay people really fully understand the impact on individual liberties when basically a open book is left for one individual somewhere in the executive branch to establish who is a threat that falls into that category. And with very little in the form of judicial overview in this time of issues, are you running into very much issue gaining traction in these courts, or running into issue with negative media coverage in your efforts?
Well, negative media coverage is certainly out there. And actually, it's not just negative, but they refuse to report on things that are being done by the Obama administration. I mean, again, let's take, for example, Obamacare. Back in 2009, I read the first bill, House Bill 3200, that was 1,100 pages long. And I saw then how unconstitutional it was. And I wrote an article that eventually evolved into being my blog. And this thing went viral. It's gone around the Internet three or four times. Hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people have read it. And basically what I said was that this was not even about health care. This was about a power grab by the federal government. And Congress was actually turning over to the executive branch powers that it had, it didn't even have in the first place, to regulate health care. There's nothing in the Constitution that authorizes the regulation of health care to the extent that they're doing it in Obamacare. And I pointed out that there were going to be all kinds of negative impacts, including doctors were going to be leaving the practice. There was going to be a shortage of doctors. There was going to be a lot of people would lose their insurance. I pointed out that illegals would be getting free health care. And I was attacked on all fronts. Media Matters, a George Soros-funded group, particularly attacked me and said that I was lying, that none of this was true, that the law prevented all this. Well, then I read the subsequent laws and the amendments to the ones they were making, and then, of course, the final bill that was 2,700 pages long that was enacted into law. And I said the same thing, and I said it hadn't gotten any better since they changed it. It's gotten worse. Now everything that I said is being proved to be true. Yet the media, the national news media, is still trying to cover for a lot of things that are happening in Obamacare. And they're covering for the president and all the scandals that are out there. And we involved, the Justice Foundation, are involved in trying to uncover a lot of information about what's going on, for example, in Benghazi, the Internal Revenue Service. We're very, very concerned about that. We're already looking into litigation. If the Internal Revenue Service adopts these new regulations that they're looking at, and the media is not talking about this at all. I don't even hear Fox News talking about this. These new regulations will basically put organizations like mine out of business for part of the year, because there's a 90-day window in there around the elections where we can't talk about issues that we don't endorse candidates to begin with, because we're a nonprofit 501c4 organization. We don't endorse candidates, but we do talk about the issues. We do talk about elections. We do point out how the incumbents that hold office, how they vote in the legislature or in Congress. So we have a lot of information we put out. We try to educate the public. That will be stopped. I will not even be allowed to talk on my own radio show unless I talk about gardening or something. And even that is going even further, because it's going to go after the Tea Parties and stop them from having voter registration drives. You know, just trying to get people to register to vote and urge people to go out to vote. Not endorse candidates necessarily, but they can't do that, most of them in the beginning. But they're going to be stopped from doing anything and exercising their free speech. And again, this is being ignored by the media. I don't think it's going to be ignored by the courts. We've already had a ruling in the court that Obama hates because it was the one where it basically is found that corporations could engage in political activity. That they did were entitled to free speech, and this was the United case that was Obama actually mentioned in his first State of the Union address, saying how horrible it was. But of course, the unions, labor unions, were set up to do the same thing, and now these new regulations that the IRS is putting in will stop Tea Party groups, religious groups, any conservative groups, legal foundations from exercising their free speech. But guess what? The labor unions, the left-wing organizations will all be exempt. They can do whatever they want in the election cycle, and we, on the other hand, will be stopped from doing what we want to do.
Right. Are you running into a lot of people out there that are voicing a high level of concern about the apparent, I guess for lack of a better word, tyranny? I mean, we seem to be moving into a hard tyranny. Just this past week, we've had Chuck Schumer out there saying to his constituents that Obama should bypass Congress, that he should use the IRS to target Tea Party groups. And I know as a talk radio host, sometimes I get folks to call in that are part of the choir, so to speak, and they're into it. But then when I'm out everyday life having conversations, there's a lot of people that just don't seem to get it. Are you running into that kind of same scenario?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of people out there that are I'm not educated on what's going on. And one of the reasons I wrote this little book on the Constitution and why so many people are buying it to hand out to friends and relatives is because the Constitution is not being taught in schools anymore. If it is being taught, it's being taught in a negative light. The so-called Common Core curriculum they're putting on people basically rewrites the Constitution. For example, here in Denton, Texas, just north of Dallas, there's a series of test questions and answers to prepare kids for testing, and one of them is about the Second Amendment. And it says that the Second Amendment provides the National Guard with the right to carry firearms. That's it.
Right.
Now, that, of course, is not true. That is not what the Supreme Court of the United States has twice ruled. The right to keep and bear arms is an individual right, and it can't be infringed upon by the government. And that's the law. That's the Second Amendment. But this is what kids are being taught. We have people out there, and there was an incident here a few years ago, which is laughable but also very scary. They had 1,500 college graduates who came out of college and were asked by the First Amendment Foundation to name the five rights protected in the First Amendment of the Constitution. And, of course, it's freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, freedom to petition the government for redress of grievance, and freedom of assembly. Only about 35% of them could name all five rights. Almost 35% of them could not name any of the rights. And what was really scary was there was a little trick question here, that the 25% of the college graduates surveyed thought the First Amendment of the Constitution protected their right to own a pet. So the point I keep making, and you know, that's just scary as it can be, but like I say, very funny. But the point I keep making in speeches I make all over the country and on radio interviews is that if people don't know about their Constitution, if they don't know what their rights are, they're not going to be aware when their rights are being taken away. And that's one reason we're pushing so hard on the education side of it. Now, one thing that has happened recently, which has given me a ray of hope, is that my blog has become very, very popular. And people, if they want to go to usjf.net and look under the About section about Executive Director Michael Connelly, they can get the link to my blog. And that's Michael Connelly, Connelly, .jigsy.com. And they can go and they can keep up with my blog. If they want to email me, I'll put them on a mailing list. But just the only thing I do with a mailing list is provide people with notice when I post a new article. But I wrote an article about, I guess it was almost 18 months ago now, called Obama's Impeachable Offenses. And there I listed a whole laundry list of things he was doing, such as bypassing Congress and acting without Congress and doing things by executive order and executive actions and all the cover-ups and this sort of thing that was going on then. And I listed all this, and I wrote this in an article, and I said basically he's violating his oath of office on a daily basis. And this was reposted all over the place. Well, one website called redflag.com recently notified me that they have had over 25 million views of that single article. So that indicates to me that people are waking up out there. If that many people are interested in reading an article about possible impeachable offenses of Obama, that's a good indication to me that people are starting to get concerned, they're starting to wake up, and they want something done to try to save this country. And the more of these little booklets that we get out there, like I said, we're on our third printing. People can go to www.constitution.jigsy.com, and they can find out how to order the booklets through PayPal online or how to order through the mail. They're $6 for single booklets, but there's substantial discounts for people who want to buy large amounts. And we recently had a Rotary Club in South Texas buy 500 copies and distribute it to the entering seniors in six school districts in South Texas because they know what I know, and that is, again, if people don't know what their constitutional rights are, then they aren't going to realize when they're being eroded, and they are being eroded very rapidly right now.
Yeah, that they are. I know you've heard the futility in the attempt for an impeachment. Oh, the Senate will never convict, and so the House is reluctant to even start. How do you counter that argument? What do you think we should be telling our representatives when they tell us that?
Well, you know, actually, we would prefer that Obama not be impeached, that he be criminally charged with what he's doing. And, you know, that it be found out who this man really is. But that's not going to happen. So the reason we're pushing for impeachment is, yes, we understand the reality of the situation. And I know that if the House votes to impeach, and it only takes a majority of the House, then the two-thirds of the Senate is not going to vote to convict. But once the House votes to impeach the president, or any other federal official for that matter, there has to be a trial in the United States Senate. And it's, the senators are basically the jury. It's a full-scale trial. It's presided over by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, in this case, Justice Roberts. But here's the key. If the House were to vote, and these articles of impeachment, formal articles I've drawn up, formal articles are going to be presented to members of Congress, some of them here soon, and we're going to see what they want to do with it. But if the House were to vote by a majority to impeach Obama, then they would appoint special prosecutors. These special prosecutors would have extraordinary subpoena powers and discovery powers. A lot of what Obama has been hiding through the use of executive privilege, things about Operation Fast and Furious, about the IRS, about Benghazi, those would be coming to light because he could not hide. This was being an impeachment proceeding. This is not just a House committee trying to get them to turn over documents. This would be an impeachment proceeding, and we feel like that they could get some of these documents and get testimony, the information about what's going on out there. That would alert the American people. That might get the American people angry enough to put enough pressure on the Senate that there could be a conviction. I doubt it because there's too many people out there in the Senate that don't care what Obama does. In fact, you're in favor of what he does. But the fact of the matter is it would also bring to light who those people are. And maybe not in this election cycle, 2014, but by 2016, there would be a good chance that we could get rid of the people in there and that we could have enough in the people in the Senate so that Obama, a lot of what he's done could be undone, particularly if there's a Republican president in there. Things like repeal Obamacare, things like do away with some of these rules and regulations he's throwing on gun owners, on the Second Amendment. And so, you know, this is something we feel it's important because it would open up a lot of doors.
So basically just the best effort there is, regardless of the conviction, to be able to get to the truth, to cut past all the executive privilege excuses and find out how criminal this regime has been from the start.
Exactly.
All right. Well, outside of those particular issues, do you have any pet projects that you're focusing on, at least during the early half of the upcoming year?
Well, yeah, something that I brought to light on my blog almost a year ago now, February last year, that I had found out about, and turned out some members of the Senate already knew about it and tried to do something about it, but the national news media had not talked about it. The mainstream media is still not talking about it, although it has been brought up on Fox News, and I'm talking about it all over the country. I'm making speeches about it. I'm doing radio shows. And this is very important to me because I am a military veteran. My oldest son is in a combat zone for the seventh time. He's in Afghanistan. He's been in combat zones for a total of 100 months since 9/11. My youngest is a Black Hawk helicopter pilot. I was commander of American Legion Post for 2 years, so I have many veterans who are friends. And, of course, like I said, it runs in the family. I wrote the book about my father's unit during World War II called The Mortarman. And so veterans' rights are very important to me. Here's what's happening. This is what I wrote about in this article and what we're preparing. We actually have one lawsuit going already against the VA, but we're preparing a second one. The deal is that the veterans are getting letters from the VA saying, because of your physical and mental disabilities, we are going to declare you incompetent to handle your own financial affairs, and we're going to appoint a fiduciary to represent you. Now, the fiduciary program has been around the VA for a long time. It was designed to help elderly veterans who might be suffering from dementia or some other problem that kept them from being able to pay their own bills and on time and to handle their own money. So usually a family member would be appointed to represent them. What happened, though, was in 2007, Congress, in an ill-advised amendment to the Nix Bill, now that's the National Instant Criminal Background Check law, and it was part of the Brady law, basically, that said that people have to apply to buy a firearm and be cleared by the federal government, by the FBI, and on this Nix list. And if they are convicted felons, or if they have been adjudicated to be mentally ill to the point of being a danger to themselves or others, or if they are drug users, they cannot legally purchase a firearm in this country. Now, Congress in 2007 expanded the definition of mentally ill to include veterans who were mentally ill, but again, it was if they had been adjudicated to be mentally ill to the point of being a danger to themselves or others. Well, after Obama took office, he decided, and VA decided, that all veterans are mentally ill. Dianne Feinstein came out and said this. She said all veterans have PTSD, and therefore no veteran should be allowed to own firearms. And the VA so has decided they're going to disarm American veterans. Now, there's the reason for this, and this is something I firmly believe, is there are 21 million veterans out there. We all took that oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. We believe in that oath. We're trained to defend the Constitution. We're not trained to defend a particular person or a particular institution, like members of Congress. We are supposed to be defending the Constitution of the United States. Any dictator who wants to take control of a country, first thing he's going to do is going to try to disarm the population, beginning with the veterans. So veterans are getting this letter saying they're going to be declared incompetent. And then the letter goes on to say, and I've got copies of these letters. People can email me, and I'll send them copies of them. And you can look at them yourself. They've been confirmed by reporters to be real. They are being sent out. But the letter goes on to say, once you have been declared incompetent, you can no longer own, purchase, possess, or transport a firearm or ammunition. And if you do, you're guilty of a felony under the Brady Act. They are declaring veterans incompetent for virtually anything. If they have PTSD, which, by the way, is not even classified as a mental illness, and it can be minor PTSD, if they've ever told somebody at the VA that they were feeling depressed, for example, some kid comes back from Iraq or came back from Iraq or comes back from Afghanistan that lost a friend in combat, and they're feeling down about it, and they tell the VA that, they will use that to declare them incompetent. We have people out there who have been declared incompetent simply because they let their spouses handle the family bills, paying the family bills. And I've got, letters that prove this. We've had veterans be declared incompetent because of physical disabilities, and it's incredible. There are 159,000 veterans now that are on the Nix list that we know about that cannot legally purchase firearms. And if you go with the legal criteria, 99.9% of them, we believe, do not belong on that list. Some of them don't even know they're on the list. Some of them never get this letter. They go to buy a firearm, and they find out that because of something in their medical history at the VA from years ago, they've now been declared incompetent. There's no adjudication process here. There is an appeal process, if you want to call it that, but it's not due process, because what happens is the veteran's basically told, okay, if you don't want us to declare you incompetent, prove to us you're not. The burden of proof is entirely on you. It's not on the bureaucrats that are making this decision. And by the way, a lot of these veterans have never seen a psychiatrist or psychologist. They've never been examined by a psychiatrist or psychologist. The bureaucrats that are making the decision about them don't talk to the veterans. These are independent contractors, we understand, that work from their homes and are basically unsupervised, and they make these decisions. So there's no adjudication process. What makes it worse is the veterans do appeal. We're being told by many of them that the VA is suspending their benefits. They can't even put food on the table for their families because the VA is cutting off their benefits to punish them for appealing this decision.
For having the nerve to stand up for themselves.
Right, exactly. So what we've done is we have filed a lawsuit against the VA because we filed two Freedom of Information Act requests with the VA. Number one, we wanted to know what criteria they were using to declare veterans incompetent, because obviously they're not using the one in the law, in the original law, so they refused to respond to that. We also asked them in another Freedom of Information Act request, on what basis and by what legal authority are you turning these veterans' names over to the FBI to be put on the NICS list? Again, they refused to respond. So we filed a suit to force them to respond. They then came back and said, okay, we'll respond to you. Well, they sent a letter to us saying, read our website. That was not a response because the website, I've read the website. It doesn't have on it what they're doing, the information that we requested. So we went before a federal judge, and the federal judge had basically told them, you have to respond. And they've sent us some information, and we've sent back a request for more specific information. Some of the information they sent us is very, very damning to the VA. And I'm talking to veterans out there who are losing their rights, who are facing this trauma in their lives, veterans who are being told, by the way, some of them now we find out are being told that once they're put on the NICS list, they're also going to be put on the list of people that cannot fly. They're going to have their passports canceled. And we've even received early reports, and we haven't confirmed these yet, but we're working on them, that some family members of veterans are being told, since you live with a veteran that we declared incompetent, you can't own a firearm either. And this includes spouses and children. So, you know, this is a major, major situation, and we're going to be filing a suit on behalf of these veterans, a second suit, to try to get this to stop. And we need help on this because we don't intend to charge these veterans or their families anything. But we believe that based on what we've seen is going to have to be done here, because it's going to go over the Supreme Court, we're going to need to raise $250,000 in order to fund this lawsuit, to fund this litigation. So I want two things from people listening out there. If you're a veteran and this has happened to you, go to usjf.net and send us an email and tell us what's happened, whether you just received the letter, whether you've been put on the next list, whether you've appealed it and nothing's happening with your appeal, or even if you appealed it and won it, send us that information. And we will help represent you to try to get your rights back or to protect your rights. So usjf.net, and myself or my assistant will get back with you as quickly as we can. Secondly, we need, well, actually three things we need. We need some attorneys around the country who would be willing to take this, not necessarily pro bono. Most of our attorneys that are contract attorneys with us, they donate some hours, but then we also pay them. It's at reduced rates from their normal hourly rate. We can't afford to pay $400 an hour to an attorney. We can't raise that kind of money. We have too many things going on involving the Constitution. But this veterans thing is very important to us. So if you're an attorney or a paralegal who's willing to volunteer some hours, please contact me through usjf.net. And thirdly, we need people to donate, even if it's only $5. But, you know, we don't have any big contributors. We'd love to have some, but we don't have any. The head of Progressive Insurance gives one of our adversary organizations, the ACLU, $1 million a year personally. We don't have anybody doing that for us. But so go and donate. You can go to usjf.net, go to the top of the homepage, and you will see up there a little link that says donate. You can go on that link and you can find out how to donate to us on the Internet using a credit card. You can also find out the mailing address so you can mail in contributions to us. And we want to have the money, not all of it, we don't expect to have all of it, but we have to have at least $100,000 in the bank before we can even file this lawsuit on behalf of these veterans. So we need to raise that money, and that's what I'm doing around the country, and people are donating. We're getting pretty close to being in a position where we can go ahead and file this suit. I would prefer it to be filed in Texas, because in Texas I can personally handle it, which will save us a lot of money. I'll still need some attorneys to assist me, but we won't have to have an attorney, a contract attorney, for the case to be the lead attorney. So if any of you out there are veterans and you live here in Texas and this is happening to you, again, there will be no charge to you or your family. Go to usjf.net and let me know what your situation is. I'm in the Dallas area, but we can do this anywhere in Texas. And we'll be filing not just on behalf of a single veteran. We're going to be filing to try to get the federal courts to stop this from happening to all of our veterans around the country. And, you know, we're the last hope, apparently, for the veterans, because twice the United States Senate has attempted to stop this. Back in 2013, NDAA appropriation bill, National Defense Authorization Act, they attempted in the Senate to amend it to stop the VA from taking away the Second Amendment rights of veterans. That amendment was opposed by Obama and was defeated. Then, right after I wrote my article, Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina filed a new bill called the Veterans Second Amendment Protection Act. And it was in the Senate, because a bill like this has to originate in the Senate. It originated in the Senate, and again, the Obama administration opposed it, and the Senate Democrats defeated it. So, us, the USJF, and this lawsuit are really the last line of defense for veterans. And let me explain something to people out there. This is only the beginning. If they get by with this with veterans, we already know that the IRS is going to have access to our medical records. So if you have ever gone to a doctor and said you were depressed, whether you've taken medication or not, if there's a note in your medical records that so-and-so felt depressed today, or if you've ever been on certain types of medication, like Ritalin for ADD or ADHD or any of those medications, even when you were a kid, haven't been on them in years, if you've ever taken antidepressants, you will start getting letters from the federal government. Well, they may not even notify you. They may just put you on the NICS list. This is what they're doing. Like in New York State, they're carrying out this out to the point where they're kicking in doors and confiscating weapons. And one of the major targets are veterans. So this is going to start happening to everybody.
Well, you know, veterans. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you, but I was just basically going to reiterate your point. Veterans have traditionally had one of the strongest blocks of support in America. And if they can get away with doing this type of behavior to veterans, then they know they've got the green light to do it to everybody. And I just wanted to highlight that again. Since they did this 7% cut in the veterans' pension as part of this past budget deal that quietly swept through both the House and the Senate and has been signed into law now, it's absolutely infuriating. There were people making efforts then to try and make sure that they snuck that money back in, but the Senate Democrats wouldn't have it. Why is it that they're focused so strongly on veterans right now? Is it part of that simple ideology that nobody should have guns or know how to use them? Or is there another reason why they're targeting veterans, do you think?
Well, you know, both is really both reasons of the case. Number one, you have your leftists out there, your liberals like Obama and members of the U.S. Senate like Dianne Feinstein and most of your national news media, they believe that the people should not be allowed to privately own firearms. They don't believe in the Second Amendment. They don't understand what the Second Amendment is about, or if they do, they don't want people to own firearms because the Second Amendment is not about duck hunting. It was put in there so that we could defend ourselves against tyranny. Let's face it, our founding fathers were doing something entirely new. They did not know if it was going to work. They did not know if forming a constitutional form of government like ours would last. They were afraid that somebody might take control and slip into tyranny. They wanted us to be able to react and defend ourselves against our own government just like they had fought against the British to get our freedom in the first place. You have people out there in the Democratic Party and even some of the Republican Party who want nobody in this country to own firearms except the police and the military. And so that's number one. Number two, you have the veterans. Like I said, there are 21 million of us, and we believe in the Constitution. We stand up for the Constitution. We took an oath to continue to fight for the Constitution, even when we're not on active duty. Now, let's look at history. Adolf Hitler took control in Germany when he was elected chancellor. Now, he was elected, just like Obama's been elected. The first thing that Adolf Hitler did was to nationalize the healthcare system. He had the belief, and he was correct, that if you can control access to healthcare, you can help. It'll help you control the people. That's exactly what Obama's doing with the healthcare system. Again, like I said back in 2009, this is not even about healthcare. The second thing that Hitler did was to disarm the German people, starting with the veterans, because he didn't trust the veterans. The military veterans in Germany had taken an oath very similar to ours, but they had a constitution. They took an oath to their country, to their constitution, not to Adolf Hitler. When I took my oath of office, Richard Nixon was president of the United States. The oath was not to him. The oath was to my country, to my constitution. So Adolf Hitler wanted to do that. The third thing Adolf Hitler did was to start purging the German military of high-ranking officers who, again, were loyal to the country and not loyal to him. So this is deliberate. This is a deliberate act. And like I said, if they can do this with the veterans, they're going to be able to do it with anybody. In fact, they already laid the groundwork. A couple of weeks ago on a Friday, so it was under the news cycle, on the radar, okay, and hadn't been reported by the national news media to what it really means, Obama signed two more executive actions on gun control. One of them was to amend federal law, and he did this on his own. He didn't go to Congress, which is something that is in violation of the Constitution, in violation of the oath of office. Article 2 of the Constitution says the President of the United States is empowered to and obligated to enforce the laws passed by Congress. Article 2 does not say the President can make laws. It does not say he can decide which laws to enforce and which not to. It does not say he can amend laws. But Obama does all of that. So a couple of weeks ago, he amended the so-called HIPAA Act, which is the federal requirement that people who, their medical records, be subject to a right to privacy, that your medical records cannot be released by the state or by any of the institution without your permission. Obama said in this executive action, I'm doing away with that. I'm going to allow the states to turn over medical records of individuals in their states to the FBI. Any records that indicate a person is mentally ill, and we know what criteria they're using, basically no criteria, they will turn these over, and you will start receiving notice that you are on the next list. Now, they're even talking about pushing this one step further, and that is having the CDC, the Federal Control Center for Disease Control, declare firearms to be a danger, like some drugs, to be a danger to people if they even own it, and to be a danger to children, and basically declare anybody who even owns a firearm is therefore mentally ill because they're putting other people in danger.
Right. So in essence, this is really part of the measured effort to just completely do away with the Constitution as a guiding principle for the United States and to do away with all individual liberty here in the country.
Exactly. And we're working with other groups to try to form a defense here. And I just came from a meeting the last couple of days with a remarkable group called the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, run by a former sheriff named Richard Mack, and has a number of current county sheriffs and police officers in it. And they basically are telling the federal government that if you pass laws ordering confiscation of firearms in our counties, we're not going to enforce them. And they're even going to the point of saying, we're not going to allow you to come in and enforce them. So we're forming lines of defense. And our best line of defense is people like the state legislatures, which in some state legislatures they are passing laws saying that we are not going to allow you to enforce laws that violate the Constitution. Because all these sheriffs and peace officers, excuse me, they took the same oath I did to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. They intend to do that, and that means protecting their people from constitutional violations by the federal government. And this Richard Mack, years ago during the Clinton administration, won a lawsuit in the United States Supreme Court that most people know nothing about. And I'm going to be doing an article on my blog about this because this is very important. Basically, he and six other sheriffs from around the country challenged the requirement by the federal government that they enforce the Brady Act. Because if the Brady Act ordered, you know, set up the situation with the Nix list. But right. It wasn't required by the state that the states do it on their own or local counties do it. The federal government, ATF, and the EPA, excuse me, came in and basically said that you as county sheriffs have to check the background, do background checks on anybody who buys a weapon or tries to buy a weapon in your county. And Sheriff Mack said, no, I believe that's unconstitutional. I'm not going to do that. And they told him, well, we're going to put you in jail. Well, he goes to court, and he has a federal judge basically say, you cannot tell an elected official in this country who has taken the oath of office that they have to violate that oath. You cannot put them in a position where the judge said they have to choose between violating their oath of office and accepting orders from the federal government to do something that is unconstitutional. This went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court agreed with these sheriffs and said this cannot be done. So this is something that, you know, is very, very important, and this is where we're drawing the line in the sand with people like individual sheriffs and with groups like the state legislatures. And local city councils can do this also.
Okay. Well, as a constitutional attorney, in your legal opinion, what do you think would be the best means to try and preserve the Constitution right now? Are you in favor of something, say, like the Convention of States, for example? Something along those lines, or is there something you think would be even better than that?
Well, no, I'm recently was in a debate on whether or not we should call a constitutional the Convention of the States, and I'm adamantly opposed to that. And here's the reason. We have ways to amend the Constitution, and one of those ways, of course, is to get a constitutional amendment, proposed amendment, passed by 2/3 of the House and Senate, and then ratified by 3/4 of the state. That's not easy to do, to say the least, and it was not designed to be easy to do. It was designed to be difficult. We really don't need to amend the Constitution. We just need to abide by it and force our elected officials to abide by it. Now, if you call a convention of the states, the provision in the Constitution that allows that to be done basically just says the states can call a convention to amend the Constitution. It doesn't say how that's going to be done. It doesn't say how delegates are going to be chosen. It doesn't say how many votes each state will have. Is it going to be based on population? How is it going to be done? We don't know. It could very well be that an amendment could be called, for example, or a convention could be called to say, strengthen the Second Amendment. And that was all that was put in the call. There's no way of knowing that they can't expand the Constitutional Convention once it's convened to cover the entire Constitution. They could basically do away with the Constitution. And this is why I think that's a dangerous precedent. What we have to do is get state legislatures. It's a fight across the board. What we're doing with the United States Justice Foundation is important because we are winning. We are getting some courts to rule in our favor. We are protecting the 10th Amendment, for example, which for many years was just dormant. Nobody even knew what the 10th Amendment meant. And I argued this for the first time about 20 years ago in court, and I came in front of a judge who looked at me like he had no idea what I was talking about, and neither did the guy on the other side of the counsel table. And then the judge looked into it and, in fact, ruled in the case on the 10th Amendment, that the 10th Amendment cannot be violated, that there are certain things that the federal government cannot do, powers that are left to the states and to individuals. And this is what the Constitution says. So we need to fight on the basis of the 10th Amendment and on the basis that, as far as I'm concerned, the Bill of Rights cannot be altered by any up or down votes by the Congress and can't be altered by the courts. The fact of the matter is that the Constitution never gave the federal courts, including the Supreme Court, because it only created the Supreme Court, the power to interpret the Constitution. It just gave it the power to settle disputes between states and between states and the federal government. That was it. Of course, they've expanded that power too much. But
right.
We need to continue to fight in the courts, but by the same token, people need to fight on every level. We need to take back our school boards, which in many cases are keeping our children from being educated properly and are keeping them from learning about the Constitution. We need to take back our city councils, which, like in San Antonio, Texas, we have a very left city council down there that basically has passed a law outlawing freedom of religion in the city. It says that if you have certain religious beliefs relating to homosexual marriage, relating to abortion, this sort of thing, then you cannot run for office in the city, you cannot do business with the city, you cannot be employed by the city. That's an incredibly unconstitutional action. But it's being considered right. by many other cities around the country. So we need to take back our city councils, we need to take back our county governments, we need to elect sheriffs who are like Sheriff Mack and these other sheriffs that I've been talking to for the last couple of days that are willing to accept that they have an oath that they took and they are not going to allow unconstitutional acts to occur in their counties. Now, in some counties, the sheriffs are not elected. They're appointed. That's a different ballgame. Because they're appointed, they're beholden to the people they're appointed by. Sometimes the mayor, sometimes the president of the county commission or whatever it may be called. But again, if we take back that county and that county appoints the right sheriff, those county officials, then we have another bulwark of drawing a line in the sand. Somebody else will stand up for the Constitution. And then, of course, the third thing we need to do is we just need to educate people. People need to listen to your show, encourage other people to do it. My show, Our Constitution, is broadcast on the Internet, on America's Web Radio, at 4 o'clock Eastern every Wednesday, and then the show is archived and goes on to, you can listen to it anytime you want to. I'm doing literally dozens and scores of other shows around the country. I'll be glad to come to places and speak about the Constitution. I had 3 speeches right here in Texas last week, and then, of course, I went out of state for this meeting. And so I'm willing to come and do what needs to be done to help educate people. And if people, again, if they want to buy copies of the Constitution, the book that I've written, they can go to www.constitution.jigsy.com and find out how to order copies of the Constitution. Again, help us out financially. Help us with these veteran suits. Do what you can. This is what we have to do. We have to keep fighting on all fronts, and we're trying to do our part. USJF.net, if you're a veteran, been affected by this, let us know. We're here to help. If you can donate some time to us, again, USJF.net, or if you want to donate some money to help us, and again, let people know about my blog and my show and about this show, and get them to listen in, because they'll get quite an education. They will hear the things that they are not being told by the mainstream news media. And that's a lot of valuable information out there that the mainstream news media is totally ignoring, and people are not aware of what's going on. So, you know, this is what we're doing, and this is where we're going with this. And I appreciate you having me on, man.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. I certainly have a full plate. And let me go ahead and take this opportunity as we're kind of closing in on the end of the hour here to thank you personally, not only for you, but also your family's service to the country in the military and what you're doing right now in service to the veterans. I can't possibly overestimate the value that this country should be placing on our veterans. These people have answered the call. They have stood on a line, and they have done everything to protect our freedoms and our lives from threats that we, if we have not served, if we haven't been to a forward area, we can't possibly understand. You can watch a movie and think you get a feel for it. No. unless you've been there, unless you've stood a line, unless you've stood a post, and these people answered that call. Some went above and beyond. Some never made it back. But they did that not for the promise of glory, not for the promise of riches, because that certainly doesn't happen, but they did it out of a sense of honor, a sense of duty, and a sense for understanding that if they didn't, freedom would die. And that's a far worse fate. So thank you very much, sir. I greatly appreciate not only what you're doing now, but the service that you have provided us before. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to being on your show again, maybe giving you an update in a couple of months about what we're doing.
Just feel free to let me know when you're ready, and I'll be more than happy to have you on, sir. I greatly appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, thank
you
very much. All right, sir. Now, God bless. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Michael Conlon. He is the current executive director for the United States Justice Foundation, and he's an Army veteran, he's an author, he's a teacher, he's a freelance writer. All of his information is available. You can track down at the United States Justice Foundation website, which I have a link to that in the show description. His blog, I have read some of the blog posting, and they're very interesting, very informative. And, you know, the call to action to help with this, it's imperative. We have to stand up for our veterans. You've heard me make this call before. You know that I mean it. You know I'm serious. It's not just, yeah, we're supposed to support the troops if we do conservative talk, which you can listen to some of these talk show hosts, and you get that. You hear them, yeah, I support the troops. And you don't know, you can't tell from their tone how much they mean it. You've heard me bring up veterans issues on the show before. You know how passionate I am, and so I am pleading with you, please answer the call that Mr. Conlon has made. If you can help in any fashion, if you can volunteer time, if you can volunteer a few dollars, whatever you can do to help, please help. Like I said, the link to the United States Justice Foundation website is in the show description. You can follow it there. If you're hearing the show on a podcast later, if you come across it, if you're listening on Stitcher.com or TuneIn or iTunes or wherever you may be finding this, if you're getting the archive here, I ask you, at the very least, go to the website, usjf.net, and check out what they're doing, what they're saying, what the information is, because these people are fighting for our veterans. And in return, that means they're fighting for every single person's individual liberty. That's what they're doing. They're fighting the fight so that later on we don't have to. And I promise you, we will have to fight this fight if we don't fight it and win it now, because they're not going to just target veterans. I've made the point before. You've heard me say it if you've listened to the show before when we were talking about the pensions. The first time that came up, they know nobody in this country has had a bigger block of support. So if they can get away with it with the veterans, they know they can get away with it with everyone else. Is it fair that somebody who has stood up and risked their life, maybe not even come back home, should be pushed into poverty? Not because of reasonable actions, but because our own government fails to honor its promises it's made. Time and time again, we have come to expect politicians to lie to us. We have come to expect politicians to tell us one thing, and then if there's enough of a stink, or if the media gets on to them about it, then give us excuses about why they didn't follow through. But there are two groups of people in our country that should never, ever have to worry about our government breaking its promises to them. Seniors and veterans. And I'll actually expand the "and veterans" part to mean even current active duty. Our military, current or veteran, should never be facing a situation where our government is failing to honor its commitment. Whether it's for an ideological reason like we don't like people that own guns, or if it's something far more sinister, like if we disarm the population, then we have full control. It doesn't matter which camp you're in. It doesn't matter which one of those you believe, or if you believe something in between. The bottom line is, it still comes to this very simple point. Our veterans have paid a huge price. Mentally, and in lots of cases, physically as well. And for them to come back home and to not have their full complement of constitutional freedoms enshrined in our Constitution, offered to them, when they have taken the time to stand up and fight for them, for themselves and the rest of us, when the very least we can do, the very least we can do is show them our support, to give them a firm, solid, resounding thank you. And we do that by not letting bureaucrats and pencil pushers and so-called progressives marginalize them and push them into a corner to keep them silent. Just one thing Mr. Connolly said and other guests have pointed out that have been on the show, and something that I have said before too, that oath does not stop. There was no expiration on the oath that our military and our law enforcement officers and our elected officials take. It's not a matter of on Inauguration Day, the president stands there and puts his hand on the Bible and raises his other hand and solemnly swears to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. That doesn't mean that 15 minutes later it's okay to ignore that oath. Our military proves that they take that oath seriously. And again, like Mr. Connolly said, there is no oath to an individual. It's not, I, Tim Tapp, solemnly swear to follow the orders, irregardless of consequences, follow the orders of the President of the United States, or the oath doesn't read like that. That's not the promise that's taken. That is not your word on the Bible and then to God himself that that's what you're going to do. The oath is to protect and defend, to protect the Constitution and to protect all the individual people for whom that Constitution was hard-fought and designed to protect. There was absolutely no excuses for a man like Barack Hussein Obama to have been allowed to get to a second term, given how badly he has failed his oath. And the same can be said for countless senators and certain members of the House as well. We've created a political aristocracy here in the United States where so many people now believe that they are part of a privileged class, that they no longer represent the people. Mr. Connolly gave you his feelings on Convention of States. I know a lot of the folks that listen to the show feel differently, and that's fine. You see, the thing here is, as conservatives, I think most of us had enough that we agreed with what he said, that we understand this man is on our side. So we can overlook one or two feelings, just like when when State Representative Joe Carr was on the show a few weeks back, and he said that he didn't support the fair tax. That's not a deal breaker, people. What we want, what we need, are passionate people that are willing to pick up the fight and protect and defend us, the people. They do that, in this case, the United States Justice Foundation does it by defending the Constitution as it's written, not as it's being twisted, and certainly not as the current interpretation of the Supreme Court and the Congress is going to allow it to be done. The power and authority of the president to write and execute executive orders is limited. This actually is something that I could probably get on my soapbox and do the rest of the freaking show about, but after a while, I'm sure that most of you would get rather bored with that. So, with that having been said, one more time, I want to thank Mr. Michael Conley for coming onto the show. Please check out the website. That's the United States Justice Foundation. You currently can find that at usjf.net. Like I've already said, you can find that link listed in today's show description as well. And from that website, you can find all the information about the foundation itself, and you can find links to Mr. Conley's blog, and you can find a great deal of other information. But he's right. He is absolutely right when we talk about the fact that most Americans do not have the basic fundamental principles. They don't understand because they've never been taught the Constitution. They don't even teach a civics class anymore in most states. They don't want you to know the Constitution because, like the guest earlier said, if you don't know the Constitution, then you don't know when your rights are being broken. And I know I have talks every day, even with some reasonably bright people that just don't stay up with the news. They'll hear part of a headline. They'll be watching part of a clip on a TV news broadcast, and they'll say, well, what about this? This is a big deal. Why are people making a big deal about this? And it's incumbent upon any and all conservatives that catch this show. Well, I mean, obviously any and all conservatives, period, but no point in me saying it for the folks that don't catch the show because you're not hearing it, right? It's incumbent upon all conservatives to explain and express how important our individual liberties are, how important it is to maintain the sovereign power of the nation in the hands of the people. The first real break that I've seen, the one big ray of hope that I've seen, was once the truth about the lies surrounding Obamacare, once those started coming to light, poor people who thought they were getting free health insurance found out that now not only is the very same health insurance they could have bought before going to cost them at least twice as much, if not four or ten times in some cases as much, but now, under penalty of law, if they don't buy it, they have to pay a penalty, one that will progressively get larger. And while the business mandates, the employer mandates, are being pushed back by executive fiat, which also, again, not constitutional, the individual mandates are still in place. If you don't already have your insurance now, well, you're getting mighty close to the deadline. You're already uncovered in many cases. You don't have health insurance. But again, I mean, you've heard me say it. You've heard probably hundreds of conservatives say at this point, it was never about health care. If you want to make health care more affordable, you go after the things that make it more expensive. Access to health care has not been the issue. If you can't afford health care, but you have to go to an emergency room, there are laws everywhere in this country. They have to treat you. You had access. Now, that doesn't deal with the expense of that access. But there are ways to go about that. All right. I'm going to try and shift gears now. I'm going to take a little quick break. When we come back, we're going to discuss some of the issues of the past week. And because I wasn't on last week, we might cover a little blowback from the previous week as well when we get back. And now we'll be taking phone calls here for the remainder of the show. If you'd like to make statements about Obama pulling the race card as he tries to explain why his poll numbers are so low, we'll take calls about that. If you want to talk about Eric Holder, again, pulling the race card as well, I would like to spend some time in depth discussing Mr. Chucky Schumer and his insistence that, well, that tyranny is not a bad thing and the Constitution is meaningless. Of course, he didn't put it like that, but that is still what he was saying. So if you want to give us a call, feel free to do so, and we'll take those calls, those numbers. Let me go ahead and give them out to you. You can call us at 347-426-3550. You can call us toll-free at 888-287-5313. Or if you're listening live right now at the Blog Talk page site, then there's this little button near the show title that would be your Skype button. You should be able to connect to us direct via Skype if you choose. No matter which way you choose to call us, go ahead. And after this break, I'll be right back. Stay with me.
Into the truth. Listen in live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog posts and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yes, that's right. Every Sunday right here at Blog Talk. To us, you can also find Tap Into the Truth over at Spreaker over there. Recently, I've been broadcasting pretty much Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So there are plenty of broadcasts to check out. I kind of hit the news of the week throughout the week. Some of those items I revisit here. Lots of times I do try to keep everything unique, fresh, and, well, give you a reason to check out both sides. No point in going over there if I just recap it all over here, right? Ha, ha, ha. Also, like I said, please check out tapintothetruth.com. At the top of the page is the easiest way to follow us on Facebook or to follow us on Twitter. Also, near the bottom of the homepage, you can very easily find a place to send me a message. And I am still looking for feedback and love to get your take on the topics of the day. Speaking of the broadcast over at Spreaker, one of the things that I found very interesting is during the earlier part of the weeks, it is usually a case of preaching to the choir. That's the time when the folks that are looking for more interesting takes on the conservative viewpoints of the news of the day are checking out. The folks that are there on Mondays and Wednesdays, I learned this much the way I do here as far as the folks that aren't necessarily calling, but the folks that are active in the chat room. which kind of a quiet day in the chat room today, by the way. A lot of the regulars are not there, so I hope everyone is actually enjoying the little bit of a thaw most of the country is enjoying and trying to shake off this blasted Arctic cold that's been over the majority of the country the last several days. The thing is, on that Friday night broadcast, it's a different group of people. That's where all the liberal troublemakers come out to play. And I know this because this is when most of the negative, anti-conservative viewpoints, just about anything I'm saying, gets attacked. And I couldn't tell you how many times somebody in the chat room gave a big F-U directly to me over something as simple as the Tea Party. So we're talking about the tactics of Chuck Schumer and what he said, and, well, not the tactics of Chuck Schumer, but the tactics Chuck Schumer was suggesting would be okay. Let me go into this article, and then we'll discuss it a little more in depth, just in case you missed it. I'm hoping most of you haven't. Most of you probably know what's going on. But in the event that you did not catch it, Chucky Boy, who I think is running for the title of most vile man in America, at least with his most recent statements, his statement in regards to the veterans and the cut in their pensions had my blood boiling already. Most of you guys know that. Saying that they were going to have to sacrifice. It's their turn to give. That I can't tell you how much that runs to me, and it makes me furious just thinking about it right now. But last Thursday, Chucky, Mr. Schulma, he was given a speech at the Center for American Progress, one of the most far left and definitely one of the most vitreous organizations of the country that is full-heartedly behind the so-called progressive movement here in the country. Basically, during this statement, this speech that he made, he told everybody there that Barack Obama should bypass Congress, that he should use the IRS to curtail. I know you can't see my air quotes right there, but I can't help but do it. Curtail Tea Party activity. Quoted as saying, "It is clear that we will not pass anything legislatively as long as the House Representatives is in Republican control. But there are many things that can be done administratively by the IRS and other government agencies. We must redouble those efforts immediately." Now, the statement was met with great applause. The Center for American Progress, filled with these ultra-left-leaning individuals, loved hearing this kind of talk because they, lovers of tyranny, thinking they should have full control over all of us, think that it is, in fact, the job of government agencies like the IRS, the NSA, and what other member of the alphabet soup you'd like to point out, that it's really their job to enforce the liberal mindset, to silence and squash the conservative viewpoints. In a nation that once embraced diversity, it seems now that diversity, if that represents conservatism, Christianity, or just common sense, well, that's just not welcome anymore. But I'll go on. Mr. Chucky Schumer also said that one of the great advantages the Tea Party has is the huge holes in our campaign finance laws created by the ill-advised decision, Citizens United, versus the Federal Election Commission. Now, isn't it funny? The Supreme Court ruled on that. We even talked briefly, mentioned that early on in the interview earlier with Mr. Mike Conley. This particular case, you know, there was not a Democrat, a liberal or a progressive on the planet that liked that deal, and they're still complaining about that. That needs to be revisited. That was ill-advised. But we're just supposed to accept Obamacare because that's settled law. The Supreme Court said so. just seems a little hypocritical to me. Anyway, he also went on to say that, obviously, the Tea Party elites gained extraordinary influence by being able to funnel millions of dollars into campaigns with ads that, oh my, ads that distort the truth and attack government. Gulp. Well, big government people, of course, don't understand that asking our federal government to adhere to its limitations put forth by the Constitution is not an attack on government. It's a return to the balance of power. Government has overstepped its bounds. And as far as distorting the truth, there are a lot of folks high up in the National Democratic Party, and I'm very specific about this, a lot of folks that are very high up and influential within the National Democratic Party that have distorted truth so much in pushing their party agenda that I don't think they even know what truth is anymore. Has any of you guys out there known somebody that was just such a pathological liar that they would tell a lie so long and so often that eventually they believed the lie? It wasn't a lie to them anymore. You know, they had said it so many times, and they forced it into their own subconscious to remember it, because, you know, the major reason most of us don't like to lie is because then you have to tell 10 more lies to protect the first lie, and you have to remember everything you said, and it's an awful lot of work. But these people rehearse these stories so much because it's part of the agenda. But eventually they tell the story so often that they actually end up believing it. I've got a couple of examples of people that I know exactly that way. I'm not going to get into those stories. One of them would just hurt the feelings of some friends of mine that are mutual friends. Then the other, well, it's way too personal to get into. But I'm pretty sure I'm not the only person that knows somebody like this. And sometimes I think folks like Chucky, Mr. Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York, is in this category, along with a few folks by the last name of Clinton and Obama and Pelosi, and, you know, folks like that. At any rate, see, last May, the IRS admitted that it targeted conservative groups seeking tax-exempt status for extra scrutiny, which in turn sparked a controversy that isn't anywhere near being settled. In fact, the federal government is working really hard to try and make those unconstitutional targeting, legal. They're trying to make something that's unconstitutional legal so that there's no repercussions that the federal government will face coming from it. Ultimately, there was outrage. Ultimately, too, one of the biggest problems I have when I talk to liberal-minded folks about this is, in years gone by, you get as recent as at least the 70s, and certainly before that, honest-to-goodness liberals, not the progressive ilk, but folks that are just liberal. It's a shame we have to get into the differences in all this and start cutting everybody up in these tiny little groups to get to what it all means, but liberals would have been just as upset about the IRS targeting conservatives as they would be if it was Richard Nixon targeting his enemies list. But there's a lot of folks now that, you know, they're not even all that into national politics, but they lean a little to the left because they've been brainwashed, like a lot of folks, into believing that the left is the side of caring and wanting to help the poor and wanting to help minorities and take up for sexual orientation, all of these groups, these poor people that are just discriminated against all the time. The left has convinced people that they're the ones really there to take up for and protect them, when in reality, all they want to do is keep everyone divided. Stay in your little box, because split up, if you're so busy being angry at the other guys, then you don't pay much attention to what they're really doing behind the scenes. I believe it's been said best that every time a big scandal breaks, look for the other story they're trying to hide. You know, if the mainstream media is reporting on a big scandal, they're hiding something else behind it. But my point still comes back to these, the honest-to-goodness liberals who just think government should play a bigger role in helping individuals is basically the most defining effort. Even that's a little misguided, but these folks aren't traitors. They're not enemies. They're just, they haven't yet realized that there are better ways to help those that are less fortunate and ways that are far less divisive and don't penalize people for being successful and certainly don't reward people for not making an effort. All the big government solutions do that. Now, that's not to say that everybody that receives aid, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to go into all that. I'm not going to defend the statements right now. But understand, just because you're a small government person doesn't mean that you're not pro-people. Chucky didn't leave it at that, though. He went on and expressed concern that the Tea Party candidates might run in Republican primaries and falsely claim those primaries are rigged to favor those candidates. I got to tell you, if you've tried running as a Tea Party candidate, you know the establishment Republicans, even at local level elections, they don't want a whole lot of Tea Party folks running. Because the Tea Party candidates, they appeal to the common man. When they come in and they just bring a message of limited government, that appeals to a lot of people on both sides of the usual voting block. So to say that Republican primaries are rigged to favor Tea Party candidates is an asinine statement that is far from accurate. Well, this man just complained a minute ago that these campaign ads distorted the truth. And he went on to say that those primaries are rigged, he claimed, because of the makeup of primary voters and gerrymandering that favors Republicans. Now, he actually got this part right. The primaries are designed to favor Republicans because it's a Republican primary. There's no rigging. There's no gerrymandering. There's no redrawing of the districts to determine who's going to win a primary. Because you're either running as a Democrat in the Democratic primary, don't run into too many people running as Republicans over there, or you're running as a Republican in the Republican primary. Now, again, I think most of us are familiar with the term RINO. So we know that, we know that not everybody that runs as a Republican is a Republican, but sometimes those folks win those elections too. So I ask the question, does Chucky understand the truth? Well, he went on to say, quote, our very electoral structure has been rigged in favor of Tea Party candidates in Republican primaries. He was trying to suggest we should have some different type of election process. Yeah, Chucky recommended a system similar to that used in Washington, where all voters, members of every party, can vote, and the top two vote-getters, regardless of what party they're in, then enter into a runoff. Schumer also claimed that people are drawn to the movement because of, yep, you guessed it, racism. If you're a Tea Party guy, you're just a racist. I can't tell you how many people said that in the chat room on the Friday night show. Yes, Tea Parties are just a bunch of racists. Have you ever been to a Tea Party function? I can't claim with 100% exclusively that there are no racists in the Tea Party, but what I can tell you is that the Tea Party movement is not about racism. It's about controlling government. It's about getting the constitutional constraints back in place. It's about stopping out-of-control spending. It's about possibly making a balanced budget amendment, which would certainly help out-of-control spending. It's about possibly limiting the number of terms a candidate can hold in office for, which also might help a lot of the spending, because if you can't make a career out of being a politician and continue to get millions and millions and millions of dollars and contributions and gifts and what have you, then it might not be quite so appealing to play ball. You might be more willing to stand up and represent the people that you were sent there to serve. That's what the Tea Party's about. But no, not to Chuck Schumer. Of course, no surprise. Chuck is one of the big voices on the left these days. He's been quiet for a little while. He's out there right now. Kind people are drawn to the movement because of racism, concerned about the country that white Anglo-Saxon men are not exclusively running anymore. The Tea Party, rank and file, know it's a different America. It looks different. It prays different. It works different. This is unsettling and angering to some. Really? Really, Chucky? He also told the group that the small government mantra is the core weakness of the Tea Party, and one that they, Democrats, progressives, one that they can exploit to turn American politics around to the benefit of our nation. And that, of course, is code for destroying the Constitution. Now, according to different sources and according to a Gallup poll, the Tea Party's approval rating is somewhere at about 30%, depending on which one you're looking at, which is even lower than Mr. Occupier himself, Barack Hussein Obama. Nevertheless, it seems the left is fearful enough of the movement to actually suggest using the force of agencies like the IRS to stop it. Moreover, Schumer's comments appear to be proof of a growing fascism on the side of the left, as liberals, you need to substitute that right there and say these so-called progressives, because again, the liberals themselves, they don't embrace fascism. They fought against it. Unfortunately, the so-called progressives have taken control, and they want to be hidden in amongst the liberals, and they want everybody that's a little bit liberal to think that you're one of them. As liberals seek to silence any dissenting viewpoints, and we've seen this in the past couple of weeks in New York in particularly, when you've got Governor Andrew Cuomo, a liberal Democrat from New York, who said that conservatives who oppose abortion or believe in the Second Amendment, well, you guys are just extremists, and you have no place in his state. None. Bill de Blasio, the newly elected mayor of New York City, later on, after Cuomo was backing away, backtracking just a little bit, because he got pushback from some rather influential conservatives, well, de Blasio came up and said, you know what, you're right, Governor. There is no place in New York, not in New York City, and certainly not in anywhere in New York State. Now, after the Democrats were absolutely shellacked in the 2010 midterm elections, the Center for American Progress said that Obama should use all of his authority as president to bypass Congress and unilaterally enact his progressive agendas. They said that, and Chucky, well, he went in front of them and he agreed with them. Now, there's only one reason why a Senate Democrat would suggest that it's okay for whoever is holding the office of president to completely bypass Congress during their constitutional duties. There's only one reason why he would suggest using the IRS to target a political enemy, to try and silence someone that has an opposing viewpoint. And it's simple. They're part of the aristocracy. He's better than you. That's what he thinks. He's better than me. He's far too important. And he probably, I wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't know that Chuck ever actually wants to run for president, but he probably has daydreams for his name is sitting on the big desk in the Oval Office. And I'm sure he would absolutely love unfettered, unlimited authority over the free world. So he's doing his part to try and make sure that they have it. But the threat isn't just contained to the liberal Democrats, to the so-called progressives, because unfortunately there's some of those over in the Republican side of the aisle too. I don't know how many of you guys saw it, but I was absolutely sickened the other night seeing Speaker Boehner on The Tonight Show talking about the NSA. We're there to protect us. Well, they're supposed to be, but is that the job they're doing, Speaker Boehner? Why, Speaker Boehner, have you not led to the floor of the House and immediately moved to stop funding the NSA until they capitulate and begin doing the job that they were founded and currently funded to do, instead of breaking our constitutional freedoms, liberties, privacies, rights, and spying on all American citizens? The NSA was not built to spy on American citizens. That is what it's doing. That's not what it was there for. That is not the job it was built for. But it is what it's doing now. And since that is a violation of the Constitution, and all spending starts at the House, the purse strings of the government is controlled by the House, all it would take is a few minutes of your time, Mr. Boehner. You could have somebody else write up the legislation if that's what you want to do. And you just make sure that it gets through whatever committee it has to get through, take it to the floor of the House, get it voted on, and get it done, and this nonsense ends then. But, oh, no, 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 no. We have to pretend like there's a difference between our side and their side. We have to pretend like, though, we are still limited by what the courts are going to say and what we're going to do. The truth of the matter is, if something is unconstitutional, then all the House has to do is withhold the funds. And they can go in and amend and adjust past budgets. They can withhold those funds. That's part of the authority of having control of the purse strings. That's the deal. It's outrageous to hear an elected official, and I'm really becoming concerned about my friends in New York. I mean, I'm down here in Tennessee, but I've spent time in New York. I went on business. It's a great place. I love it. Spent time in Manhattan. Absolutely awesome. Beautiful. But I'm becoming really concerned. I know there was a heavy liberal leaning in and amongst a majority of New Yorkers. You know, that's no surprise. It's no secret. You get a lot of that once you get above the Mason-Dixon as far as your eastern coast is concerned. Good, hardworking people. I can't tell you how many friends I have in and around the Boston area, especially out towards Gloucester. Been to Gloucester a few times. Lovely city. First went with a girlfriend. She was a big fan of The Perfect Storm, the movie with Mark Wahlberg and George Clooney. She loved the movie, wanted to go. We went to Gloucester. We've broken up since then, but I know that we're both going and spending time there. I definitely do not go at the same time. Don't want to look like a creepy stalker or anything, but I love the place. Can't stay for very long because, you know, these are honest, good, hardworking people, but again, like most actual liberals, not the so-called progressives, but liberals, they just believe the government should play a bigger role in helping people. I can get along with folks like that. Those people are not the enemy. The people that want to destroy the Constitution, they are the enemy. People that think that the government's role should be to squash freedom of speech, that the role of the IRS should be to limit the activities of those who have a different political agenda than you. Those people are an enemy to every American, regardless of how you typically vote, because they're not looking to just take away those individual liberties from just the conservatives. They're looking to take them away from everyone that's not part of their new political American aristocracy. That's what they're looking to do. That's why I challenge you to stand up for the veterans. These veterans are having their very constitutional rights stripped from them under the guise of protecting Americans. Now, whether it's ideological or if it's some grand plot to turn America into a full-on socialist state, either way, our veterans deserve our support and our assistance. These people have risked everything, and if they made it back alive, they're not the same. Some of them may actually have some legitimate mental issues. But it's because of what they've seen. It's because of what they faced. And to have Chuck Schumer in front of a friendly voter crowd or in front of a platform while he's fundraising for his next election campaign, to sit back and tell people that it's okay for the IRS to be used as a tool to crush dissent, that it's not only okay, but should be done, that it's okay for whoever is sitting in the White House to bypass Congress, to change laws on his own accord. You know, even if you happen to be a liberal, if you happen to be somebody that thinks that's okay because you like your guy who's in there right now, I ask you, would you have said the exact same thing if George W. was still in the White House? Would you have said that if the elder Bush was in the White House? Would you have said that if Ronald Reagan was in the White House? I don't think we would have had to worry about it under Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan loved the country. He loved the Constitution. I don't think that he would have willingly accepted a mantle of that level of authority. The Bushes, however, I'm concerned, probably would. The Patriot Act, pretty expansive. But see, the lies have been exposed, and people are still ignoring it. Barack Obama, just like the current Secretary of State running for president before Barack, they both ran on ending the Patriot Act. They both ran on ending government intrusion and unlimited holding without trial of suspected terrorists. Yet Obama has doubled down. He's killed more people through drone attacks, and he has utilized legal authority to hold and detain people not necessarily considered to be terrorists, I might add, but on suspicion. And typically, people that have been his enemy. This whole thing about the indictment of Dinesh D'Souza, targeting of the gentleman, Mr. O'Keefe, of Project Veritas. There's a whole new round, a whole new series of focused targeting on American citizens that have a platform and have been demonstrating to the American people the dangers of this kind of thinking. Is this solely just targeting of Dinesh D'Souza because he he did the documentary about Obama. That documentary certainly didn't hurt Obama getting reelected. Of course, in the grand scheme of things, I have questioned many times on the air the legitimacy of that election. I've seen way too many voting block anomalies that didn't automatically require a recount to make me wonder, was this election legit? And I think that's a reasonable concern. I mean, if you disagree, that's fine. You're welcome to disagree. I'm not somebody who says, ooh, I'm a thought Nazi, you must agree with me, unlike the people that want to use the IRS to target Tea Party groups, other conservative groups, other religious groups. I mean, does Chuck Schumer even realize how un-American the statement was? Did Governor Cuomo understand how un-American his statement was, that if you're one of these conservative extremists, then there's no place for you in the state of New York? You know, there's really not a lot of room for extremists of any kind, either side of the political spectrum. But how you define extremists is what concerns me, Governor Cuomo. Somebody that believes in your Second Amendment right to own and bear arms, that doesn't make you an extremist. Somebody that believes that abortion is murder and wants to stand up and say so, that doesn't make you an extremist. Wanting to go blow up a building or a bridge to make your point, that's extremist. These people aren't doing that. They're having organized protests. They're having marches. They're holding up signs. They're letting people know and understand what they feel. And they're hoping to reach out to others that feel the same way to let you know, hey, guys, guess what? If you believe in right to life, that doesn't make you an extremist. If you believe in abortion on demand just for birth control purposes, that is an extremist point of view. That's murdering a child because somebody was irresponsible. Birth control is inexpensive enough and easy enough to lay your hands on at any age anymore that there is no excuse. You don't have to have it paid for by the government. You don't have to have it paid for by your employers, and you certainly don't have to have anybody else pay for it unless it happens to be your partner and they also don't want to have a child. Okay, but that's between the two of you. But guess what? You can do that. And that keeps it your business the way it should be, not my business, not Buddy down the road here, not Frankie on the other side of the street, because we as taxpayers shouldn't have to have a penny of our tax dollars being spent on that. There are far more important things for us to spend on. And heaven forbid, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say flat out, you know what, if you're that concerned about having a baby, then maybe you shouldn't be having sex. If you just can't control your urges, if you just can't keep your libido under wraps, then why on earth would you ever expect taxpayers or your employer to pay for that expense? It's not that expensive anymore. So what is so freaking extreme about somebody who says abortion on demand, especially late-term abortion, is wrong? It's murder. Why is that an extremist view? They're trying to protect the right of an unborn child. But the people that use the argument of the woman's body, the woman's choice, well, she had the choice not to get pregnant in the first place. Once it's done, it's not just the woman's body in question anymore. It's the body of the unborn child. I know, I'm opening up a can of worms. A lot of folks are going to get kind of upset with that. But I'm sorry. That's not extremist. And, you know, Wendy Davis I'm kind of running down time. I need to mention some of this stuff about Wendy Davis. She became the death cult of abortion on demand's poster child. She is the one that Battleground Texas selected to be their gubernatorial candidate. They think she should be running the state as a Democrat. And she's gotten into so much trouble the last couple of weeks, going on and on about, well, the fact that she lied in her bio. And now she's making fun of her opponent, who happens to be in a wheelchair. Of course, she denies it. And I read the initial statement, and reading the initial statement that she made about not walking a mile in her shoes, well, that alone could have simply been a use of metaphor that wasn't intended to be a knock on the fact that Mr. Abbott, the current Attorney General of the state, who's running as a Republican, may not have had anything to do with the fact that he's a paraplegic and has been for a while, somewhere around 20 years, I think. I don't have the info right in front of me right now, but unfortunately, Mr. O'Keefe and Project Veritas managed to get video of meetings in Texas Battleground talking with Ms. Davis, going on about how our mottos are stand with Wendy. How's that going to play out with a guy who's in the world? So obviously it has been on her mind for a while. This is the campaign being embraced by the so-called party of inclusivity, by the party that's supposed to be standing up for the little guy, for the minorities, for the women, for the disabled. The one that wants you to think it's those mean old Republicans that are always the problem. They hate you. They're only for white, rich, business-owning men. That's who the Republicans are for. That's what they want you to think. But then you hear statements like that. Come on. But I'm concerned about our friends in New York. I'm concerned about our friends in Texas if this is going to catch any type of traction. I'm concerned about our friends in New York because they seem to be right now run by a bunch of fascists that are literally working every day to convince you that it's okay to ignore the Constitution, that it's okay for the president to rule by executive fiat, that we actually don't have a president anymore, that we have an emperor. Yes, King Obama, what decree have you released this Friday during the Friday document dump so that the mainstream media won't discuss it and it will be old news by the time the news cycle starts on Monday? One of the facts is I usually do an outrage of the week segment, but you know, this whole thing that I've been over, the whole Senator Chuck Schumer remarks at the American Center for Progress, that whole thing is the outrage of this week. The outrage of last week, and of course I wasn't on last week, was the just quiet passage of the omnibus budget deal. And despite the multiple attempts to get the veterans' pension back up to full, it was squashed and it was passed without it. The Republicans passed it in the House very quietly. Shh, don't tell anyone. The Senate passed it even quieter. And the next day, when it was on its way to the president's desk, it wasn't even a headline. It was barely talked about by mainstream. If you weren't paying attention to conservative news outlets, you wouldn't even have heard this was done. So that was the outrage of last week. This week it's Chuck. Mr. Schumer. Headline you may have missed comes from the University of California in Los Angeles. See, evidently, there has been a lot of racial tensions inflamed at UCLA following several incidents, but most notably, just recently, one where a professor corrected the grammar, punctuation, and capitalization in a minority student's assignments. Now, the act of correcting a black student was microaggression. I know you can't see the air quotes there, but I put them up just FYI. It was microaggression, according to members of the student group called Call to Action, Graduate Students of Color. This is kind of a long name for a student group, but anyway, this particular group launched a sit-in during a subsequent meeting of the class. Quote, a hostile campus climate has been the norm for students of color in this class throughout the quarter, as our methodology and commitments have been repeatedly questioned by our classmates and our instructor. This written by the group in a statement to the college. The barrage of questions by white colleagues and the grammar lessons by the professor have contributed to a hostile class climate. Some 25 students participated in the sit-in, including 5 of the 10 members of the class in question. Now, Val Rust, a professor of education and information, was the official target of the sit-in, though the aggravated minority student had problems with UCLA's handling of racial issues that went far beyond just one classroom. Now, again, and since the anniversary of the, well, since Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the other day, we've seen a plethora of new racial accusations. And this one comes as no surprise, too. But hey, at least this one's easy. Look at the paper. If the corrections are legit, especially if the professor says up front, I expect you to have proper pronunciation and grammar in our classwork. Well, if the corrections are legit, then there's no racism. Now, if some of the corrections on the paper aren't legit, then there's a problem. But the bigger problem is way too many people are still trying to play the race card. Barack Hussein Obama, in an attempt to explain his new low poll numbers, reaches out to the race card. Well, you see, lots of people don't like me because I'm not white. Well, you're half white, Mr. Occupier. So the very thought that it could be based on policy doesn't occur. That can't be true. Everyone loves me. Oh, yeah, that's it. I get it. It's Bush's fault, and I'm a racist. That's the only possible explanation. Eric Holder did the same thing. In this past week, he was giving a speech, and he doubles down on a statement that America is a country of cowards, that based on the fact that when it comes to race. Racial relations were so much better before the Obama presidency that it's shameful to look at our record on race relations now. Yes, things are worse now than they have ever been. No, that's not true. It's just not true. Look at the whole fight for civil liberties. Things were bad then. Now, are there still people being oppressed? Yes. Are there still racists out there? Yes. Will there always be? Probably. But racism isn't the reason people are upset with President Obama's policies. Obamacare is the big thing that's dragging the numbers down. He ought to look into it. Dealing with reality is something that this and most other politicians have a hard time doing, but these are the issues we're facing. I want to thank everybody for stopping into the chat room today. Good to see Larry in there. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate you stopping in. Also, Dabu and Guest, 1524. Not sure who you are, but thank you for stopping in. I hope you enjoyed listening to the show. And remember, as always, don't take my word for it. Definitely don't take their word for it. Take a little bit of time, do your own research, use your brain. And remember, you're always going to have to put in at least a little bit of effort on your own if you want to tap into the truth. That's it for this week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Hope last week was a good one, and I hope next week is even better. We'll be back next Sunday. Hope to see you then.
Oh.